Hello there, and welcome to Fuel Your Feminine Fire. I'm your host, Michelle Marchant Johnson, and I'm so happy that you're here because on this event, we're helping you love yourself, love your life, and find your love. And what I've noticed is over the last couple of years, for many of us, it can feel like it's really been a challenging time, and you may feel like that fire or that radiance has dimmed a little bit. So the intention of this event and the intention of myself and my guests is to help fuel your feminine fire. So I have here with me today a wonderful returning guest. That's the amazing Roy Biancolana. Welcome, Roy.
Hey, hey there. Let's burn, baby, burn. Let's get this fire going.
Exactly. Lighter, reignite the light in your life.
Yep.
So bring the fire. So Roy is a certified relationship coach and nationally recognized expert in the field of attraction and conscious relationships, and is also the host of the Attracting Lasting Love podcast. And Roy has been supporting single people in the art of attracting healthy, sustainable, intimate relationships for the past 15 years. And his experience has taught him in that getting in relationship shape is the key to attracting lasting love. So we're going to talk a little bit about that today. But first, we're going to dive into a topic that I think is going to be great for this event and great for the women listening. And that is embodying the six facets of the divine feminine. So before we dive into those six facets, tell me why you chose this topic and just give us a little intro into this, if you would.
Yeah, you know, a lot of my work, when we talk about getting in relationship shape, all I'm basically saying is when you are the healthiest, best version of yourself, that's when you attract healthier dynamics and healthier people, right? If the law of attraction means anything, it means that you attract people on your level, you know, So the more evolved we are, the more grounded and centered and the more radiant a woman is, the more she attracts the deep presence in a man. So it's all about what's your best self. You know, can we clear away the garbage, clear away the blockages, the dark clouds, and how can the sun really shine? Like, how can I really be on fire? And, you know, there's no water on me that's putting me out, right? And so it caused me to kind of wonder, like, okay, when women in general, when the feminine in general is really free of fear, free of self-consciousness, free of insecurity, free of ego, right? What would she be like? What are the qualities of the divine feminine? What are the qualities of a woman in any time or any place that really express her at her best self? And I came up with six of them. Perhaps other people could find a few more. Perhaps some people might say that's too many. I don't know, but it's partly from what I've learned from working with so many women, partly from my own journey, partly from what I know that I'm attracted to and what I find most good men are attracted to. Maybe we should say this right from the beginning. There's a lot of men that if I show them these six facets that they would be like, eh, I don't care about that. All I care about is she's hot. You know what I mean? So for mediocre men, men that are not, I think, worthy of a radiant woman, they might not be attracted to these facets. But the better the man, the more the man is trustable, the more he is showing up in the world and he's engaged and he's doing something, he's giving his gift, he wants to relate with a woman in a significant way, maybe raise a family. But the more the guy's a superior man, you know, a good man, the more they're going to all say, oh, absolutely. Like, these are the things that just make me want to devote myself to her. It's like they're irresistible. It's they just make me want to just claim that kind of woman's heart. And I think that's what really good women want, is they want to be seen, really seen and claimed. And I mean that in the best way. Like, you want to be wanted. You want to feel like you are so important to him that his life would be very much less than it could be if you were not in it, you know, and vice versa, of course. Right. But we're just talking with women right now. So there's these six qualities that I think show up when we remove the things that block them. Mm-hmm. And maybe we start with those six, right?
Yeah, we'll start with those six. And I just want to say, I think that this is really important because I think when it comes to relationships, I think one of the things that many people that have been out there in the dating world for any period of time, you and I have both experienced that ourselves, is that it feels sometimes frustrating because it's different from some other goals where you can set a goal and whether you achieve that goal is kind of all up to you. And when there's a relationship, there's someone else involved and their free choice and their free will and what they want and what their priorities are come into play here. And so one of the things I always share with my clients, and I think this is in alignment with kind of where we're going to go here today, is we want to focus on the things that we have some say in, that we have some control over. Right. And there's, of course, all this emphasis out there on attracting the right one, inviting the right one into our lives. And yes, I believe, the whole theme of this event is that I believe that we attract things into our lives based on who we are. Mm-hmm. So there's so much emphasis on that. But what we don't always think as much about is who we are being, who are we becoming, and how are we growing to invite in more into our lives, whether it be the right person, whether it be new opportunities, whatever it might be, as we grow and expand ourselves.
Right.
It creates new openings and new possibility in that area. So I just wanted to put that out there because I just think it's such an important thing to kind of remember in this process.
I really haven't thought of it that way. That is brilliant. The idea that most of us can set a goal and we're in control of it. I mean, if you want to run a 5K, you can train for that. I don't care who you are and you can get there. It might take you 3 months or 6 months, right? But I want to attract a partner. Well, I can't control that dude.
Right.
So what can you control? And that is really important because, man, if you want to suffer, try to control the uncontrollable. Mm-hmm. And the premise of what I'm saying is that when you're a radiant woman, when these six facets of the divine feminine are allowed to flow through your body, you're just your most attractive self. Mm-hmm. And my guess is you will not be single for long because the masculine is looking for the feminine. We're built to look for each other. The human race ends if we don't.
Right.
So in a sense, the flower needs, I don't know all about the technology here, but the flower needs a bee to pollinate, right? But the flower can't do anything other than be pretty and smell good. And the bees will find it. You just trust life. I mean, the bees are going to, that's what bees do. They fly and they are looking for places to land and the pollination process. But the flower can't do anything other than just be pretty and smell good. In other words, take care of you. You're there. Just trust. The bees will find you, right? So you don't have to find the partner. You have to be pretty and smell good. You have to be your most beautiful version. I don't mean physical. I mean, you have to be the most radiant version of yourself. The bees will find you because we're buzzing all over the place looking for that's what we do, right? You just want to focus on what you can control. And the interesting part is, the more radiant you are, you attract a deeper man. That's the beauty of the law of attraction. The more radiant you are, the more present of a man you attract. When you're not a radiant woman, you attract mediocre men, and then you do that, and you've done that. We've all done that. I mean, I've been a mediocre man. Lord, read my books. God. Oh my God. So I like that message that you just focus on you, and then there's an element of trust. There really is an element, if you want to be happy in life, where you recognize that I can't control much of anything.
Well, and at the end of the day, Roy, you don't want to control anyone else. They wouldn't be happy with you. You wouldn't be happy with them.
Yeah.
control them. No one wants to be like, no one wants to be in a relationship where they feel like they're being controlled.
Yeah.
That's a fear for women and men.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a sense of letting go and trusting that life is unfolding the way it's supposed to be, that you're right exactly where you are, able to learn the lessons that you're supposed to learn at this phase of your life. And so you give up the angst, you give up the seeking, the hunting, the trying, and you just focus on, I want to be the best version of me. And then whatever life decides, then life decides. Then the bees are going to find me. When? I don't know, but they're out there. They're buzzing around out there.
Right.
So, yeah.
All right. Well, so let's go into these six qualities, six facets, you call them, of the divine feminine.
Yeah. Yeah. The first one is playfulness. Men find playful women unbelievably attractive. Now, this doesn't, I'm not talking about extrovert, introvert. I'm not talking about you got to be life of the party and loud and, you know, that kind. I'm talking about this sense that you don't take yourself that seriously, that there's a lightness about you, that you're, that there's kind of a playful spirit about you, that you can flirt, you can joke, you can, you know, in other words, nobody's attracted to Debbie Downer. I know nobody, well, I can't wait to go out with Debbie Downer, right?
I mean, right.
So when you're not afraid, when your heart is open, there's a playfulness about you. And it will come through your own personality and your own style. So not every woman's the same kind, but you can tell when a person is sort of serious and sort of scared and sort of locked up and has a certain kind of tightness in their face.
Versus there's a kind someone, of a rigidity. There's
versus someone that, you know, there's a more of a flow. There's a playfulness, a willingness to laugh, even laugh at herself. So playfulness is the first one. Tied to that would be something I would call sensuality. And I don't mean sexuality. That's coming later. But sensuality in the sense of she lives in her body. Her senses are alive. And sometimes I use an illustration, like imagine two identical twin women walking down the street. And one of them, she's got a very stiff sort of walk. Her eyes are focused. Her chin is sort of set. She's walking with a purpose and she's going somewhere and nothing is catching her eye. And she's just kind of like, almost like a robot walking, getting somewhere. And the other girl looks the exact same, same physical appearance, but she's walking. It looks like she's almost dancing as she moves, right? Her body is alive, right? She's making eye contact. She's feeling, she's smiling. She's connecting with other things around her. She's feeling the sun on her skin. She feels the breeze on her face. She sees a child or a puppy as she feels love from her heart, and she's walking. This one looks like she's almost sashaying down the street, and there's an aliveness in her, a sensualness, where life is coming in through her senses and she's feeling it all and it's touching her and moving her. And which one would you say, oh my God, something in the way she moves, right? The Beatles sang that song, something in the way she moves, right? What is the something? I think it's this radiance. So we get so busy with our lives and our kids and our jobs that we lose touch with our bodies and our sensuality and our ability to experience pleasure in our bodies and to enjoy and connect with the various things that come through our eyes and our nose and our taste and touch. And so when a woman is sort of bodily alive, sensually alive, it's like, oh man, and what man doesn't like to watch a woman wiggle, right? I mean, come on, right? I mean, why do men look at women? So that when they're moving and wiggling, it's like, oh my God, it's, you can't take your eyes off of it, okay? So playfulness and sensuality. And then I would say spontaneity when a woman's free and there's not fear and there's not that contraction, she flows with the moment. There's an openness to adventure. There's sort of a willingness to move. It would be like a man dancing with a woman that just spontaneously is moving with him, responding to him and going across the floor. And she's kind of surrendered enough. Like, I trust you to take me around the floor. Like I'm letting go. I'm following. I'm responding. I'm spontaneously alive to you in the moment, rather than I have a plan. I got a way and it's this way and I'm rigid and my mind is sort of made up. And, you know, that the spontaneous flow of the feminine is really attractive. Vulnerability is just huge, right? To meet a woman who's unguarded, she has boundaries. She's not a pushover, because that's the next facet. She's fierce. Okay. But there's a softness, there's an openness, there's an availability. Like, a lot of women complain that men are not emotionally available. And that is true. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of women who are women and feminine, but they're not emotionally available. There's a guardedness because they've been hurt. They've been betrayed, lied to, ghosted, gaslighted. And now there's a wall around that heart. And they're not able to express feelings, to make themselves vulnerable. There's kind of a risk in vulnerability. It's like, I'm showing you myself and I could get hurt. But very often when we get hurt, we shut that off. And I never want anyone to get that close again, or I'm guarding that part of me. And well, walls keep you safe, but they keep you single. So this ability to let go of your past so that you can show your true heart, your true feelings, your yearning. Like, there's such a message nowadays that you're not supposed to want a relationship. You know, don't be needy. Don't be desperate. All right. I suppose those words can be dirty words. Okay. But you're also asking people to not be real. It's like, there's a real yearning in my heart to be met by a deep man. And he wants to see that, right? He wants to know that you're yearning to be met. And if you don't show a vulnerability, if you don't show that you're open and you're like, you're ready to play, you're ready to dance, then he almost will feel as if he's not wanted, that your heart isn't available to him to claim, right? So this is a huge thing for women to work through, because of the pain and the hurt that we put a protective shell around our hearts. And how do I let that go? How do I show up and with an open, available heart and vulnerability, and yet maintain the next facet, which is fierceness, meaning I do have access to anger. I can say no. I do set boundaries. If you're an idiot, I'm going to send you down the road, right? So these two come together in a radiant woman, that there's a vulnerable, open yearning to be met in depth by a man of character. And there's a don't F with me, right? Like, there's the image of the Hindu god Kali, right? She's got four arms. And I think in one of them, she's got a sword in one hand and she has the head of a demon in the other. I mean, she cut the damn head off. Right?
Right.
That's their image of the Hindu god, the goddess. The woman has got a sword and this head, right? But in other parts of the picture, you see the softer sides. So a radiant woman is not just, you know, vulnerable and unprotected and therefore misused or abused or taken advantage of. It's like, no, there's an edge to, you don't mess with her, right? But sometimes women are too much on the edge. There's like, you have too many boundaries. You're carrying too big of a sword. And you look dangerous. You're not sending out a vulnerable, come play with me. You're sending out an energy like, you're going to hurt me the way the last guy did, and I'm ready for you. Right. Mm-hmm. It's like, ooh, you know what I mean? So, and then the last one is her sexuality, right? It's the power of her sexuality. And you know, people are always amazed when I say this, but women are more sexual than men. And most people think, oh, men's sex drives. When a woman is with someone she trusts and she's open, she can have way more orgasms. She can have sex way longer. She has a greater capacity for intimacy than a man does. There's no comparison with the power of her love and the power of her body and her sexuality. And that is part of what blooms when a woman is unblocked, when there aren't fears that are shutting these things down. And so that fire, that radiance can really shine through. So those are the six facets. That's what I think happens when a woman's really free in the sort of the divine aspects of the feminine come forth, is that she's playful and sensual and spontaneous and vulnerable and fierce and sexual. And I just say that's what women are already. It's, you don't have to make that shine. You don't have to do anything to become that. It's like the sun, right? The sun's always shining. Mm-hmm. It doesn't try to be hot and sunny. It is. It's just there's clouds that block it. So you are that radiant woman. You don't have to try to become those things. You just have to clear away the junk that blocks it, and then it will shine. So your spiritual growth path is not to become something. It's purification. It's removing things that have taken place throughout your life that have blocked your radiance. And to me, that sounds way more fun than trying to become something.
Yeah.
Like, sounds fun to kind of remove some of the junk and the clouds and clear them away. And then the shine starts to come through. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Or if we're using the fire analogy, burn away that's standing in the way.
Yeah. Love that.
Of expressing that. Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting because I have a group called Mr. Right Academy, a group of women that I meet with twice a month. And we were having this conversation about playfulness and spontaneity and that sort of thing not too long ago. And some of the ladies were saying, I don't even really know what it looks like to play. So we were talking a little bit about this. You know, it's because we can get so focused on the, you know, like the woman you're describing walking down the street, we can put women on a mission. There's nothing wrong with that, because in certain aspects of our lives, that's what's needed. However, we sometimes, in the midst of life and the busyness and all we're doing, can lose this playful, fun, joyful, spontaneous kind of energy or side that can be so attractive and, frankly, can bring us a lot of joy along the way as well. So we were talking about, I just thought this might be helpful to mention, we were talking about, you know, little children and how their eyes will just light up at, you know, the smallest thing, whether it be a toy, whether it be another child, whether it be an animal, whether it be a flower. I mean, almost anything that they see out in the world or around them can just be fascinating for them. So one of the things we talked about that kind of goes along with this is just when you're not on that mission, you don't absolutely have to be somewhere and moving in that direction without taking notice of what's going around you. It's just to slow down a little bit, you know, slow down, observe, take that time to notice the world around you, to notice people around you, to smile like the other woman you described. It was almost sashaying down the street. And allowing ourselves to even notice that flower or notice that person or notice that child or notice those the beauty that's around us everywhere, and just like slowing down, and where it's possible even engaging, whether you know, be stopping and really looking at the flower, seeing if there's a bee on it right now, see the flowers that are just starting to bloom around it, you know, this kind of thing. Just being present in the moment allows for a lot more of this, what we're talking about in kind of those first two or three that you mentioned.
Yeah.
And then in terms of vulnerability, one of the things I like to mention about vulnerability, Roy, is yes, I think letting people, I call them heart glimpses when we are in a vulnerable place, because we're letting someone see a little part of our heart, a little part of who we really deeply are inside. Mm-hmm. And I think those heart glimpses are, yes, in part sharing, you know, what I'm really excited for and looking forward to is having an amazing relationship with an incredible mm-hmm. man. It doesn't have to be him necessarily. Maybe you're mm-hmm. on a first date with him.
Right.
But you're sharing a desire of your heart. I think that's a piece. But I also think a piece of vulnerability that we don't always think about as much is sharing the kinds of things that excite you, that light mm-hmm. you up, that make you mm-hmm. happy, that you're looking forward to, that you're passionate about, that are important to you. I think that's another form of vulnerability or another manifestation of vulnerability sure. that's also a heart glimpse. But I yeah. think most of the time when people think of vulnerability, they're thinking of sharing something deep and tender, and that's yeah. part of it.
Yeah, right.
Sensitive things or things that we might feel like other people might judge us for. But I also think it's about sharing the joy, the hopes, the dreams, the things you're excited about too.
Yeah. Yeah. It really, I love that. That's so true. It's not only those deeper things that are, yeah, tender and close to the heart. They're things that we feel alive about. I think it's just kind of opening up and let me reveal what's real. Let you see the real me. It might be things I'm afraid of or things that I worry about or things that really make me tick. Sometimes I'm working with people and they're like, what should I talk about like on a first date? And I'm like, well, first of all, just be in the moment and the moment will tell you. You will just sort of be there. But if you're really stuck, ask a person what they're most passionate about. What gets your blood going? What gets your juices flowing? What makes you just feel alive? You know, and there's probably different levels of revelation that you can give with that. And maybe on a first date, you there's certainly a degree of vulnerability that is dependent on the nature of the relationship.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like in the first date, sure. you might not be sharing things that wouldn't be appropriate. You're not hiding anything per se, but it's like, no, the nature of the relationship doesn't sustain that. But there's probably quite a few things that you can share that are real to you that would really show your heart and would be appropriate for someone that you're just meeting and that you feel like you would like to connect with.
There are definitely layers of intimacy in terms sure. of what we share.
And, yeah, you don't tell someone how much money you make on the first date. You don't tell someone your medical history on a first date. At least I hope you don't. You know, you don't even tell somebody where you live on a first date.
Right.
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 So, right. yeah, but you can certainly open up about something that going on with your kids that you're afraid about or, you know, just something that's touching your heart. You know, even if it's like something you're feeling about Ukraine or something, you know, I mean, you can reveal the real you.
And I think one of the things that happens when we give someone those little heart glimpses, as I like to describe them, is I think that allows for the other person to drop down a little more into their heart, mm. because I think we can all, men and women, we can all be kind of caught up in our heads. Mm-hmm. For women on a date, it can often be, do I like him? Does he like me? Did I wear the right outfit? Do I look fat? Is my hair going funny? You know, what, mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah. And I'm sure men have other things, you know, going on in their heads, but men often tend to be more in the on the intellectual side anyway. But when we drop down into our hearts, I think that also helps a man to also be able to drop down into his heart, which creates more of an atmosphere, if you will, for exchange of
right.
and create exchange of not just information, but sharing, an atmosphere of sharing, and can create greater connection.
Right. There's something really deep there that you just mentioned about the gift of the feminine to the masculine. And that is an invitation into the body. Mm-hmm. It's an invitation into the heart. And it's not to discount the man and his head and his plans and his mission and his direction, because most women are attracted to ambitious men who know who they are and where they're going. Like, you know, the guy that's at home living in the basement, eating Cheetos, playing video games is not that sexy to most women. They like a man who's got his game and he's going somewhere. And yet the feminine, the genius of the feminine is the heart, right? And the invitation that she brings to that realm. And often it begins by, this is where I'm coming from. Will you join me here? Right? Will you? And very often a man, this is almost true in any kind of dynamic. You walk up to somebody at a cocktail party, at a business networking event, and if you bring up a subject that's near and dear to your heart, sort of deep, they're going to respond to you. They're going to say, oh, if you share something about your kids, something about your kids, you're afraid of your kids, something's going on with them, they're not going to talk about baseball. Hey, it's great, man. Opening day is coming soon, right?
Probably not.
Right. You're setting the playing field in a way. And another benefit of that as a woman, when you come from your heart and you are vulnerable, if the guy rejects that, you know, and you see a consistent, either a judgment of you that way or a rejection of the invitation to a more vulnerable conversation, well, now you're finding out this isn't the right guy for you, mm-hmm. right? Now, it might take a while to guys a chance to meet you there. Some guys might be afraid, like, Lord, you know, but you want to be with a man who has access to his heart. You know, mm-hmm. when I talk about, you know, as a radiant woman, six facets, there's basically three parts for a superior man. And, you know, those are clarity of consciousness and strength of presence and openness of heart, right? Women don't expect men to be as emotionally open as they are. They got their girlfriends for that, but they also don't want you to be the tin man.
Right.
They want to know they know you have feelings. I tell guys, they know you got a heart. I mean, they don't expect you to be like their best girlfriend, you know, and be like Oprah with you or something, but they do expect you to be able to have emotions and have some contact with them and be able to share something about what you're feeling and what's going on below your head, other than sexual type of feelings. Right. So, but that's a radiant woman. She sort of calls a man into a deeper realm. And I think the masculine can bring that sort of gift to the feminine to call, because we can be lopsided, right? I mean, we have a tendency to kind of be in our own little worlds. If men are from Mars and women are from Venus, probably the healthiest thing is to have a little access to both planets. Like, I have a feminine side and I can move from that, but I've got my masculine side. And I think we're able to give each other our gifts from our different planets that can help form kind of a balanced psychology almost, mm-hmm. right? Where we have access to our mission and our hearts and so forth. So we're getting off topic a little bit, but.
Yeah, no, that's all good. That's all good. I do think that that's very true. I think we both have both the masculine and the feminine.
Yeah.
And I also think that they can serve us very well. What I find for women, though, is for most women, if we are operating mainly in the masculine energy over a period of time, we tend to get depleted. We tend to get exhausted. We tend to start feeling like maybe other people or the world is taking advantage of us. And it can definitely dim a woman's light. And I understand, from, you know, I was single till I was 43. I was out there doing everything myself because out of necessity and sure. for some people out of choice, that's necessary. But what I also know is that, you know, there were times during that period of time where I just felt so exhausted and so depleted. Now, it wasn't that I couldn't do these things by myself, but I didn't really want to have to do everything by myself.
Right. Right.
So I do find that with most women, when we've been operating for so long, mainly in the masculine, it really starts to take its toll on what I believe is this divine feminine energy and radiance as well.
Yep. Yep. That leads right into the discussion about, okay, if this is our true nature as women, we are radiant women. Those six facets are there. They're just sometimes blocked. What are they blocked by? And there are four things, and they're all words that start with the letter B. And one of them is business. It's just exactly what you're talking about. You're having to embody the masculine traits so much that you end up being that woman walking down the street that is purposeful and directed, and a man will respect that, but he doesn't he doesn't feel the yearning of that, right? Because you it's like you're overstrengthening. Take your arm, you have biceps and a tricep, right? So it's like your masculine bicep is strong, but your feminine side isn't, because you've had to raise your own children and manage your own finances and manage your own career and just do everything. And so women have a unique challenge on how do I not lose my masculine side, because it does make me more effective in my business and what I might be doing in my career. But how do I sort of let go of that side of myself and bring that more natural feminine side out of retirement, you could say, or how do I set that masculine aside after work? And I talk about sometimes with women, not only changing clothes between going to work and going on a date, but like smudging themselves from all that purpose, direction, budgets, deadlines, structure, and sort of smudging that part away and kind of rekindling that spontaneous, vulnerable, playful part that wants to dance. You know what I'm saying? So I think that business is a huge one. The second one that blocks is blame. Okay. When we blame and we feel like a victim and we have a real to me mindset, why is this happening to me? Why are people doing this to me? And there's that kind of that negativity, you know, that blocks your shine. You know, it's like it's plaque in your arteries. It's just blocking the flow. Right. So part of the things I work with my clients are, one is, how do you manage that masculine feminine thing in business? And two, where are you blaming? Where are you creating that kind of negativity and that maybe that bitterness or maybe that resentment? This brings up the parts where you've been hurt in the past and there's still resentment or bitterness or anger about something that's in you. And you know, that one woman you said in the class, how do I bring forth that playfulness? That'd be the first thing that I would say is, let's make sure you're not holding on to any negativity about the past. Because if you are, it's like you can try all day to be playful, but there's a kind of a dark sense in you. And it's just going to block your ability to have the flow move through your body. You know what I mean? So, and then a third one would be baggage. Okay, that's just tied to that, is like how much the past is alive. It blocks us. And then the last one, and I have it written down here. So,
okay.
Because I don't always remember them off the top of my head. Okay. Well, did I catch them all? No, I know. I'm missing one significant one.
You're all right.
Yeah. Well, you know, I just, that sort of
take your time, Roy. We can add it a little minute if we need to.
Yeah. So the other one is beliefs, mm-hmm. right? We have these ideas. I'm not good enough. I'm unlovable. I'm unworthy. Men are this way. The dating scene is this way. So
that was huge. It's so huge.
Those beliefs, those thoughts that, well, I mean, it makes us do crazy things. I don't know exactly when people are going to see this, you know, but Will Smith had some thoughts going on. Like, don't you say this to my wife. Don't you disrespect her. I'm not putting up with that. And that little voice in his head, go up on the stage and slap his ass. Right. All right. That probably is something he regrets afterwards. But for a while there, he was listening to that, to the ego. Right. So our beliefs really, they control our actions. They really control our attitudes. Like if a person has the thought, the belief, you know, I'm never going to meet someone, I'm going to die an old maid. Right. Well, how playful are you going to be?
Right.
How vulnerable and sensual? I mean, you're going to be dark. You're going to be depressed. You're going to be, you won't be very inviting because you're believing that. So that's a big piece to not only what do I believe about life and relationships, but what do I believe about me? Something called core stories of deficiency. These I'm not good enough type things, or I'm not worthy. We all go through things in our childhood where we take messages away, right, wrong, good or bad. But you know, if you raise in an alcoholic family or abusive, you're going to have stories of abandonment, that I'm not worthy of a man's devotion, that I don't deserve love. These are deep things that when you're carrying them, there's just no way the light can shine through your eyes. So you got to work on the business thing. You got to work on your baggage. You got to work on your beliefs. And the other one, I forgot, but anyway.
Yeah, well, and as far as the beliefs go, I think this is such an important one. They're all important. But I believe the beliefs that we have, which sometimes we're aware of and sometimes we're not, sometimes they're more on the subconscious level.
Oh, yeah.
But they can be like, if we think of a computer and the computer has a hard drive in it, we don't necessarily see that hard drive, but it's running the whole show.
Yep.
And the same thing can happen with our thoughts, whether they're conscious or unconscious. We can be, quote unquote, doing all the right things on the outside. But if we have a self-sabotaging thought process, conscious or on the subconscious level going on, it can sabotage the whole thing.
Yep.
And so it is really important to look at that. And in fact, I was speaking with one of my private coaching clients this morning, and this topic came up about thoughts and some of the thoughts, you know, that she had been having about herself. You know, I'm too old, I'm too fat, I'm too much this or too much that. And we talked about this, and we talked about how it is, if we said the kinds of things that we allow to go on in our head to other people, we would have no friends, right?
Right.
I once did an exercise in one of my group classes, Roy, where, you know, this topic of the thoughts and the inner critic and the inner mean girl, we called her the inner mean girl, was coming up. And so just for fun, I had my class do a drawing of what their inner mean girl looked like. And so they sent these back to me. They turned them into me. And it was incredible. I mean, I had these vicious looking monsters with claws and big teeth, and they were yelling all kinds of rude, nasty messages and obscenities at these women.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I, for fun, drew mine.
Yeah.
And mine was scary too. I mean, I feel like I've done a lot of work, and she doesn't show up as often now, but she still shows up from time to time. So I have to lovingly manage her and send her on a vacation. But we were just talking about how we sometimes entertain these thoughts and allow these beliefs to persist in us, that if we were allowing that to come out of our mouths and say that to someone else, they'd never want to speak to us again.
Yeah. 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 But what a beautiful, how playful you are. What a playful exercise.
And it was amazing.
For women to do it, that's being playful. Because hopefully they looked at that and they're like, yeah, that's true. And that's hilarious. It's like,
we did.
Are you kidding me? I do this to myself.
We did have a lot of fun with that.
Yeah.
And you know, some of the women said,
Bring it on your first date, ladies. Take that one. Bring that picture on a first date and say, I want to show you, this is my side that I don't want you to know about.
One of the ladies said, yeah, I found out you don't want to be in my mind on a dark night alone. It's a dangerous place. We did have a lot of fun with that. And some of the ladies said, I'm not allowing her to live rent free in my head anymore.
Yeah.
Look at her. She's not going to stay rent free in my head anymore.
I love that. And that's one reason why, even with my clients, you might do this too. I really stress developing a very short meditation practice, because it's that nut job living in your head. So you need to train and become more aware of that voice in the head and learn how to stop listening to it and how to ignore it and how to send it on vacation. Because we get so identified with the thinker, the storyteller, that there's no space between it and us. I am that monster. You know what I mean? So without like some sort of spiritual practice to help you begin to notice that it's just a thought, it's just a picture, that I don't have to believe it and act on it. You know, that sort of mental training is a big part of dealing with those beliefs that end up blocking us from being this fearless, free, exciting, sexy creature that we are in our natures. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah, beautiful. Yeah, it's a fun thing. And I think when we recognize also, it's important. I just want to mention this before we move on. I think it's important for us to recognize that it's important for us to have compassion for that part of ourself, because I think for most of us, the inner mean girl or the inner critic that pops up is a part of us that is trying to protect us from being hurt again or from being disappointed again, from having our heart broken again. But as you said, these thoughts or these walls or these barriers that we build around ourselves, they might make us feel like they're keeping us safe, but in reality, they're also keeping us isolated from what we desire the most. So when I say I lovingly manage her, even though she looks like a scary monster, you know, I'm like, okay, she's already in there talking to me, so I can talk back to her. Right. And so I just say, I really appreciate what you're trying to do for me. You're trying to protect me. You're trying to keep me safe. What I want you to know, though, is I got this. I'm okay. Yeah. I've got this.
Yeah.
And you have been working so hard for so long that you deserve a very, very long vacation. Mm. Take a trip around the world. Don't worry about coming back anytime soon.
Yeah.
Go off and relax. I know this sounds funny, but I find when I do that, there's some humor. There's some playfulness in it.
Right.
And it also helps because I'm like, I'm releasing her from duty. She has been on duty, on guard for so long. She must be exhausted.
And what I hear is you're not resisting her. You're not hating her.
Right.
You're not, because what you resist persists.
Right.
So you're not pushing her back down. You're not repressing, because whenever you repress, it just comes back up at the weirdest times. So I'm hearing you welcoming that part of yourself, embracing that, recognizing it was there for a reason. It has served you. And yet it's no longer necessary. So you know, but yeah, I hear you being friendly towards yourself.
Because self-compassion is so important. It's so important for us to be compassionate for ourselves. So key. So Roy, this has been, as always, a really fun conversation. I always enjoy connecting with you, and I love what you've shared today. And I know you have a gift for our audience, and I want to give you an opportunity to share about that too.
Yes. You know, you can see over my shoulder here is my new book, Relationship Bootcamp. So it's like a fitness metaphor, getting in relationship shape. And that's kind of what we've been talking about here is when you let go of the things that are blocking your radiance. That's what I mean about a woman being in relationship shape. She's a radiant woman. She's sort of free from fears and blocks and those kind of things. So what I've created is a way to discover sort of your current fitness level, right? Like if getting in relationship shape is really the key to attracting something healthy and sustainable, as I believe it is, then just like if you went to the personal trainer in the gym, the first thing a trainer would do is do an assessment on where you are now. Then they can put a program together for you. So I have the same thing. I have what's called the relationship fitness self-assessment test. And it's a way of discovering, okay, what is my current relationship fitness level? How ready am I for something real? If you're going to run a marathon or a triathlon, you got to be in great shape to go the distance. To have a great love life, you got to be in shape to go the distance. So what kind of shape am I in? Well, I've created this test for you to kind of find out. And it's on my website. It's a 30-question true-false test. Very quick to take, 3 to 5 minutes. The test is accurate. That's the bad news, because most people find out that they're human and that they need to get in better shape. Okay. So don't be surprised if it shows that you got some muscles that you need to strengthen within you to be better prepared for something real, but it's absolutely confidential. Even I don't see your results. I just get notified you took the test, but I don't see what's happening. Get some perspective. I mean, what I'm saying here, not the gospel truth. I'm not like God. I don't know absolute things, but get an expert's perspective on your current fitness level. Because if you find that you need to get in better shape, well, that's what I do as a coach, is I put a program together to work on the areas in your life that you need to strengthen if you want to be able to get on the starting line, you know, and run the race and finish it. If you're going to buy a house, you got to find out your credit score, right? Because they won't give you any money if your credit score is not good. So you want to raise your credit score, so then they'll give you a loan. Well, you know, you got to find out your relationship credit score, because if it's low, you're just going to create the same kind of drama and patterns that you've had too much of already. And so you can raise your credit score, you can raise your relationship fitness level, and create something beautiful that lasts. And that's what I'm here to do.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. So everyone that's watching or listening, the link to the assessment is right here on the page.
Awesome.
So you can just click there and go to take that assessment. And Roy, I want to thank you so much for what you've shared and appreciate your contribution again to the event.
Love you, Michelle. Love being with you and everyone. And I love what you're about, man. Just lighting them on fire.
Yeah. Great. Yeah. We're here to light the fire. Beautiful. All right, everyone. We hope that you'll join us for more of Fuel Your Feminine Fire. And we thank you so much for joining us today. Take care and bye-bye for now.